And welcome to Juno Afternoon on this fine Thursday. My name is Shona Strausser. We have a great show ahead for today. We've got Chris Valencia, the managing editor of this year's edition of Milepost. Mary Irvine and Kimberly Naylor will be here to talk about Saturday's Slow Art Day. We'll get a not-so-silent preview of this weekend's not-so-silent film at the Gold Town Theater with Colette Costa and Bob Banghart. And Brendan Sullivan will be here from the Juno Skating Club, and he'll talk about this Saturday's spring skating show. And, of course, as of every Thursday, we will have Nancy DeCherney here with Arts Up. So we have a full hour ahead of us. And we're going to go ahead and launch right into National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Students in the South Dakota district are requesting an honor song to be performed at graduation next month. Honor songs have not been allowed in the past. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Elmbolt has more.
Chamberlain, South Dakota is just south of the Crow Creek Reservation in the central part of the state. Officials say nearly 40% of the high school enrollment in Chamberlain is Native. This week, the school board heard a student petition requesting a Native honor song at graduation. Petitioners call it significant and culturally important. While board members say they plan to vote on the issue at a May meeting, the requests have been declined in the past. Previous school boards have preferred a feathering ceremony for Native graduates, which this year make up 28% of the graduating class in Chamberlain. Some Native parents are calling the board's decision racist and say diversity should be encouraged in the ceremony, even if that brings other performances to the event. The school board is scheduled to vote on inclusion of the song on May 13th. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbold.
A Washington tribe and an environmental law firm are challenging plans by companies to use rail lines to ship oil. As Mike Clifford reports, tens of millions of barrels a year are estimated to be sent to Washington State under a proposal.
Tyson Johnson with the Quinault Indian Nation says his tribe wants to see the same kind of environmental review for crude oil shipped to the new proposed crude oil terminal as currently takes place when oil is pumped via a pipeline.
I feel that if the watershed gets damaged due to an oil spill, it's going to become a people problem versus a tribal problem. And so we also feel that this is also in the best interest of our neighbors for their benefit and for their children.
Facility proponents say there will be little or no environmental impact. Earth Justice sued last week seeking environmental review on any proposed terminal. Kristen Boyles with Earth Justice says state law normally requires a full environmental review, but that is being circumvented because companies are shipping the oil by rail.
Shipping oil by rail to a barge, then to take it to a refinery. The number of breakpoints in that system, as you can imagine, are large, and the risk of an oil spill increases the more we do this kind of thing.
Johnson says two more crude oil terminals are also proposed for Grays Harbor.
That was Mike Clifford reporting. It's a big night for contestants in the Miss Indian World competition taking place in New Mexico. Ladies vying for the crown will show off their skills tonight in the traditional talent portion. Talents often include song, dance, storytelling, and other ways of sharing tribal culture. The young Native women are also competing in areas of public speaking, personal interview, and dance and essay. The winner will hold the title for a year, traveling North America, sharing her culture and tribal traditions. The outgoing Miss Indian World is Assiniboine Sioux Jessa Ray Growing Thunder. The 2013 winner will be crowned Saturday at the Gathering of Nations powwow in Albuquerque. A groundbreaking for an Alaska Veterans Village is scheduled for Saturday. Haynes Assisted Living will break ground on the Sobolev McRae Veterans Village. The new facility will feature 11 income-adjusted apartments for veterans, and it will also include 10,000 square feet of office space for nonprofits to help veterans and elders. The event includes a cannon firing and a dedication and groundbreaking ceremony. Chickasaw Nation Governor Bill Anitubby was inducted into the Oklahoma Historians Hall of Fame. Anitubby has served as governor since the late 1980s. Since then, he's helped lead the tribe in diverse business ventures and has been instrumental in preservation projects like the restoration of the Chickasaw Capitol Building and Chickasaw White House. He was honored with others Friday at an annual awards luncheon of the Oklahoma Historical Society. On this day in 1914, Army Sergeant John Raymond Rice was born. The Ho-Chunk man was killed in action during the Korean War. Rice had also served in World War II and held many military awards and honors. Yet, a national controversy was sparked after a cemetery refused his burial in Sioux City, Iowa, because he was Native American. President Truman ordered Rice be buried at Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia. He was buried with full honors almost a year after his death. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. And our first guest today on Juno Afternoon is Chris Valencia with Milepost. Hi, Chris. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, she's joining us by phone, so we really appreciate that. And so, of course, I just got back from a great trip in which I used the Milepost. So for those listeners who don't know actually what the Milepost is, can you go ahead and fill us in?
Well, the first edition was 1949, so it's been around for a while. And the first edition was 72 pages, and now it's 760.
Wow.
And it actually began as a guide to the Alaska Highway. Bill Wallace worked for the fire service up here, and he thought, well, you need something because no one knows what's along the road, and these people are starting to come up once it opened to the general public. So he started this mile-by-mile guide, and it grew over the years. He started doing all the highways in Alaska and all the highways in Yukon and then access routes through British Columbia and Alberta. So now we have, I think, 60 major highways that we log mile by mile.
Sure. So for the, you know, so what's the major difference between, like, let's say your regular, you know, your regular map and the Milepost?
Well, we're very detailed. Very
yes,
detailed.
You are. I love it.
Yes, and there's a lot of history. It's kind of fun because so many people worked on it over the years, and so many people who live in these areas have contributed that there's just a wealth of information. And so besides just telling you how far something is, you know, it'll tell you why a river is named what it's named and where it flows and where this campground is and how far you need to drive to see this little waterfall. So we had a fellow down on the Kenai who was talking to the Department of Transportation about a turnout, and he could go back in the Milepost and show them that this scenic viewpoint had been there for years. So it's a great history book, too.
Wow, that's really great. So this year is the 65th edition, like you were saying, of the Milepost. And you were the managing editor of this Milepost, correct?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Can you tell us what's new and different and exciting about this particular year?
Do you know that is the most commonly or most frequently asked question is, why should I buy this year's book? Well, number one, you can complain if something's wrong, whereas if you have last year's book, you can't.
That's right.
And, you know, really, people do say, well, how much really changes? Well, actually, sometimes a lot changes. You know, campground prices go up. The ferry schedules always change. They even change after we go to Pet Press. So, so I don't even know what to say. We spend a lot of time driving the roads. We'll start out at the end of May or middle of May, and we'll go through till September, and then we put the book together from October through January. And so there's a lot of changes in typing and editing that goes into the book. This year we recognize the anniversary of the ferries.
Oh, great. Yeah, the 50th anniversary.
Yeah. But it's just updated. We have all new photography. And we have a Planet Trip map that unfortunately had a digital hiccup, so a highway is missing, so that's certainly new.
Which highway is it?
Well, actually, the Parks and Seward Highway did not print on the map. Don't ask me why.
So don't plan your trip there.
Well, no, we did get the map reprinted, so anyone who wants a new map just has to call me or email me. It's christine.valencia@themilepost.com. And I'm on the masthead, and we will mail you you a new map.
Oh, great, great. That's a good way to fix it, right?
Yes.
So what would you say is the most unique, you know, we talked about some of the features, but what's the most unique feature, you said a little bit about history, but that the Milepost offers for, you know, for our people that travel Alaska?
Well, I would say that that's a good question. For instance, all right, one of the people who drives for us, Sharon Knoll, she's one of our field editors. She's been working for the Milepost for 40 years. She's driven the Alaska Highway umpteen times.
Mm-hmm.
She's driven the Dalton Highway a dozen or so times. She's driven the Denali Highway a dozen times. She talks to all these people along the way, so she finds out all these little things, you know, like why this mountain is named after Nadine at Tangle River Inn and where the best hike is. And all those little things are in the milepost, and you won't find them. I mean, there's a remarkable lack of signage along northern roads, especially in Canada. And so it'll tell you exactly how many miles you are from someplace. And you won't see a sign that will tell you that.
For ages, yeah, exactly.
For ages is right.
Where's places that the milepost can be found? Is your regular bookstore? Are there other great places to check it out?
Well, I know, for instance, here in Anchorage, Fred Meyer, Costco, Sam's, the bookstores, Cars, they all carry the milepost. I think Juno's probably the same.
Yeah, for sure.
And then you can always order online. And it's also on Amazon. And we have our own website and an 800 number. So it's readily available in Alaska, that's for sure.
Great. You know, I've actually never been on a road trip in Alaska without the milepost.
Good.
Even here in Juneau. Our 45 miles of road, yeah. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about the milepost today?
Well, no, it is available in a digital edition. If you buy the print edition,
okay,
you can get a digital edition for free, including an iPad download. You can also buy it digitally from iTunes for Android and iPads, and it's cheaper than buying the print edition if you just want the digital.
Okay.
And we're going to be introducing an app, a milepost app. And I don't have all the details on that, but we'll get the word out when it's available.
Oh,
and,
please. I bet that's going to be popular, yes.
Yeah, and that'll be fun because everyone gets to test it and see if they like it.
Oh, well, great. Well, great.
So I'll call you back when I know what's going on, and we'll have another chat.
Fabulous. That sounds good. Well, thanks so much, Chris Valencia, talking today with us about the milepost. It's actually the 65th edition, the 2013, and it's actually a beautiful cover. I'm taking a look at it right now. It's black with moose and trees, and it's quite lovely. So congratulations on that, and if you're planning any big road trips, the new milepost is out and ready for you.
Thank you so much, Sean.
Yeah, have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
In a fit of desperation in 1942, when the rest of the world was off at war, the armies got together on what they had to do, even though it was never done before. They pushed a strip of gravel through the northern wilderness, 1,500 miles of mud, dust, and snow. 8 months after they started, it was finished more or less, but the changes it brought on, they couldn't know. More than just a highway, it symbolizes dreams. For the people who have used it, it is more than what it seems. Through the mountains, bogs, and forests, over rivers, creeks, and streams, the Alaska Highway goes on. Over the years, people have used it, first a trickle, then a flood, in a motley vehicular parade. Trucks and cars of all descriptions driving through the dust and mud. The overland connection, it was made. It's taken headlights by the hundreds and windshields by the score, as migrants left their homes and ventured forth.
And welcome back to Juneau Afternoon, a little Alaska Highway for you on this fine day. And now in the studios, we have Mary Irvin and Kimberly Naylor. And we've got Mary from the Alaska State Museum and Kimberly Naylor from the Juneau City Museum. And we're here to talk about Slow Art Day. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, so Slow Art Day, Well, I did some research because I was like, what is that?
Yeah.
And, well, I'll let you go ahead and explain it because,
in the year 2001, there was a study conducted at the Metropolitan Museum in New York City, and they found out that on average, visitors looked at individual works of art for a maximum total of 17 seconds.
17 seconds to, like, take in a Picasso or something. Okay.
Isn't that amazing? So 3 years ago, this little movement started, you know, to have people slow down and really engage with the works of art. And it's blossomed into this global phenomenon, or phenom, as we like to say.
Oh, nice.
Of people going to an art museum or gallery and then choosing their own five different works of art to look at and spending up to 10 minutes each at each work of art. So it's kind of an interesting movement.
Wow. So, I mean, I did some, you know, I read about it a little bit, and we're looking at 267 venues worldwide right now. So I assume that the Juneau City Museum, Juneau Douglas City Museum, is on board?
We are, yeah. Mary called and offered, you know, to have us participate in it, and it just sounds wonderful. It sounds like a wonderful opportunity to have people come to the museums and really, you know, look at art slowly.
That's so great. So what? So you said at least 10 minutes. You know, is it? So what is involved in the day?
Right. So people can come anytime from 10 in the morning up until noon. And it's thought that you would choose your own pieces that you want to look at.
Okay.
I mean, if you're at a loss, come to the front desk at the State Museum and we'll have pre-approved some works for you to spend some time with. And at the City Museum, I think, Kim, you guys have devised a little booklet with thought-provoking questions. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. We actually chose five pieces for people to observe and to look at, and then we have their kind of stations.
Okay.
And so at each station we have a booklet with questions, you know, like what colors do you see, how do they make you feel. We're really emphasizing family participation.
Okay.
We kind of made the questions so it would access all ages.
Sure.
So, but of course people are able to go around and look at anything they would like.
Slowly,
slowly.
So how do you choose the pieces? You know, you choose five pieces to look at in a you know, both beautiful museums. How do you choose, okay, these are the ones that we're going to really digest today?
I worked with the curator of collections and exhibits, Jody DeBryan, and we tried to incorporate a wide variety of different objects. We have a textile that we're going to be using, and one of our stained glass windows. We have a photograph, and then our current exhibit, Dan Fruits, he paints landscapes, and so his is one of the objects that'll be viewed as well. So,
yeah, great. Yeah. And so did the is the State Museum have also, you said, some recommended ones to?
We do, but we're hoping that people will come in and choose their own.
Right.
And so it'll be a little bit more open exploration at the State Museum, and it really is to have people, open their eyes. Like, I got my car fixed yesterday, and the gal was running me back into town, and she said, "So you work at the State Museum? What do you have there besides taxidermied animals?" And I was like, "Oh, girlfriend, how much time do you have?"
So, take a slow day with me on Saturday.
Really. So you could choose paintings, photography. Currently we have Clinkett Armor by Tommy Joseph from Sitka.
We have
Raven's Tail Weavings. You know, there's myriad of Alaska Native artifacts. And so hopefully people will come in to the State Museum and choose their own objects. But we will have a default list that you could pick up at the front desk if you'd like. And then, so this is from like 10 to noon. And it's thought that people will, at least at the State Museum, Kim, tell me different at the City Museum, but State Museum, people will like gather at the front desk around noon and decide where to go for lunch.
Oh,
and
great.
And they'll discuss what they, you know, got out of their engagement with their chosen piece of art.
Great.
And at the City Museum, I guess we're doing it a little bit different. We have the curator of collections and exhibits, Jody, will be available for casual conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So folks can kind of come up and talk to her. We'll have coffee and juice available. I know it is one of the things in Slow Art Day is that folks will get together and have lunch afterwards, but we didn't really organize it as such. But
right.
I think that people, if they go to both museums, will be picking up on that. So.
So is the idea, and I have no idea, I'm just going to ask, but is the idea behind Slow Art Day is that people take people so fast these days with media, social media, and just the way that we use the internet, is that's maybe why it's speeding up the time in the museum?
Absolutely. You know, research has been done, and it's showing that our neural pathways in our brains are actually changing because of the pace. Becoming ever more rapid in our
right.
society, you know. So, it is the inner tubes, mm-hmm. the internet. You know, I used to have an old uncle who would say, "Eat it slow and taste the molasses." And that's really what Slow Art Day is all about: just going a little bit slower and really looking for what the artist was intending, or you know, coming at it from your own perspective, and just spending time with some art for a change.
Oh, well, thanks so much. That just sounds just really amazing. And so is it both museums, the Juno Douglas City Museum this weekend, this Saturday, and the Alaska State Museum, and it's from 10 to noon?
We've advertised 10:30 to 12:30.
Okay.
Our museum opens at 10, so you can come at any time.
Great, okay. Great.
And Shana, it's free at both museums.
It is?
No way, really?
Yes.
Oh, hello. What a score.
Yeah. I plug one more other
Please
thing
do.
That we're doing at the same museum?
Do.
The same Saturday, same time,
okay.
same bat channel.
Uh-huh.
We're having 6 graduate students from the University of Alaska Fairbanks come
mm-hmm.
in, and they're presenting their stories about their research in fisheries. And so they'll be doing individual presentations, free and open to the public. We hope people will come and listen. They've titled it, "How a Black Cod Loses Its Lunch and mm-hmm. Other Ocean Science Stories."
Oh, wow. And what time is that?
And that's from 10 to 12. Right?
Oh, great. So
Museum.
You could actually get a whole, you could hit art at both places slowly and hear a fabulous lecture.
That's okay. Right.
Great. Where can we get more information? Is there a place online that we can look?
You bet. It's www.slowartday.com.
Perfect. It's spelled just like she said it, maybe one less O. Well, thanks so much, Mary and Kimberly, for coming in today. We really appreciate it and really encourage people to get out and see some slow art.
Thanks so much.
And that was a little information about slow art happening this Saturday. And we're going to go ahead and get a little bit of Writer's Almanac, some Garrison Keillor. Here we go.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 25th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of the poet Ted Kooser, born Ames, Iowa, 1939, who said, "I had a wonderfully happy childhood." He started writing poetry seriously as a teenager. He said, "I was desperately interested in being interesting. Poetry seemed a way of being different." Went to college, flunked out of grad school, took the first job he was offered at a life insurance company, worked there for 35 years. Ted Kooser says, "I believe that writers write for perceived communities. I worked every day with people who didn't read poetry, who hadn't read it since they were in high school, and I wanted to write for them." So, every morning he got up at 4:30, made a pot of coffee, wrote until 7, then he put on his suit and his tie, and he went to work. It's the birthday of Howard R. Garris, born in Binghamton, New York, 1873, who gave us Uncle Wiggily, the old rabbit in the suit and the top hat. Garris was a reporter for the Newark Evening News. He wrote hundreds of children's books, published his first Uncle Wiggily story in a newspaper in 1910. It was so popular, he ended up writing an Uncle Wiggily story 6 days a week for more than 30 years. Howard R. Garris said, "Half the fun of nearly everything is thinking about it beforehand or afterward." It's the birthday of Ella Fitzgerald, Newport News, Virginia, 1917. When she was 16, she entered a contest at the Apollo Theater in Harlem, walked on stage wearing ragged clothes, men's boots. She sang "The Object of My Affection," won the contest. Soon she was fully employed in the nightclubs of New York. And it's the birthday of Paget Powell, born Gainesville, Florida, 1952. Went to college, studied chemistry, spent 8 years as a roofer in Texas, working on a novel on the side. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Olds, "Crazy." I've said that he and I had been crazy for each other, but maybe my ex and I were not crazy for each other. Maybe we were sane for each other, as if our desire was almost not even personal. It was personal, but that hardly mattered, since there seemed to be no other woman or man in the world. Maybe it was an arranged marriage. Air and water and earth had planned us for each other, and fire, a fire of pleasure, like a violence of kindness, to enter those vaults together, like a solemn or laughing couple in formal step or writhing hair and cry, seemed to me like the earth's and moon's paths, inevitable and even in a way shy, enclosed in a shyness, together, equal in it. But maybe I was crazy about him. It is true that I saw that light around his head when I'd arrived second at a restaurant. Oh, for God's sake, I was besotted with him. Meanwhile, the planets orbited each other, the morning and the evening came, and maybe what he had for me was unconditional, temporary affection and trust, without romance, though with fondness, with mortal fondness. There was no tragedy for us. There was the slow, revealed comedy of ideal and error. What precision of action it had taken for the bodies to hurtle through the sky for so long without harming each other. "Crazy," a poem by Sharon Olds from her collection Stag's Leap, published by Alfred A. Knopf and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org/mobile. Produced by Kathy Roach and Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
And that was Writer's Almanac here on this fine Thursday. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. My name is Shona Strausser. We've heard lots of great, great things today happening around in the Juno community. And one more fabulous thing happening this weekend is the Juno Skating Club Spring Skating Show. And here in the studio with me, I have skater Lori Ballstad. I have coach and board member Yvette Sidon. Did I get that right? Excellent. And I also have Brendan Sullivan, who is the artistic director for this fine showcase this Saturday. It's actually bigger than a showcase. And also a coach. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great. Thank you, Shona.
Thank you.
So, yeah, tell me all about it. It's soundtracks from the Silver Screen.
Right. So the Juno Skating Club this year, for the first time, is going to produce two shows for the community. We're going to do the soundtracks of the Silver Screen, a figure skating event, and that's our theme. So all of our skaters, we have 28 numbers in total, and
wow,
all the programs are going to be done from scores from film.
Oh, so every single one is actually a show tune, a movie,
right, a movie soundtrack or something like that. Yeah.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so we've got single skaters, duets, and some group numbers as well. So.
And you said 28 full numbers.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
at each
wow.
show. So each show is 2 hours long. The first matinee is from 3 p.m. until 5 p.m.
Okay.
And we're having an evening show as well from 7 until 9 p.m.
Okay, great. So we've got a 3 p.m. start and a 7 p.m. start, and this is, of course, at Treadwell. Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
great. So, Lori, can you tell me a little bit about what you're skating in?
I'm doing a solo, and I'm also skating in a duet with one of the guest skaters, Bryn Hoffman, and we're just kind of having fun and enjoying skating while we skate.
Yeah, so what movie songs did you choose with your skating there? Yeah.
I chose to do Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend.
Okay, right on.
And then the song Hot Honeys from Chicago.
Oh, okay.
For my duet with Bryn.
Mm-hmm. Great. So how does that actually work? Do you let the song help influence the choreography, or do you go vice versa?
Well, when I choreographed my routine, I let the song kind of influence the choreography a little.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like any crescendo was like a jump kind of thing, or like I kind of decided when I wanted my spins based on how the music sounded.
Okay.
But I kind of had some ideas of what I wanted to do going into it.
Sure, sure. And what do you think is like, you know, what's, I don't know if you can tell me, maybe you want to save this for Saturday, but what's kind of, you know, your hot move?
I don't know.
Lori's got lots of tricks up her sleeve.
Double jumps in there.
Oh, yeah? Nice. And so you said a guest artist. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that, Beth?
Sure. We actually have two guest artists coming this year. For anyone who's been to our show before, we have Keegan Messing coming down again from Girdwood,
at
the Anchorage Figure Skating Club. He is a phenomenal skater, if you have not seen him, on the senior level, sort of an international competitor.
Oh, wow.
Super fast, really great jumps and spins.
Cool.
And then for the first time, we have a young woman named Bryn Hoffman coming from the White Horse Figure Skating Club.
Sure, sure. I've
and
heard her name
she's at the junior level, right?
I think
novice.
It's novice.
Mm-hmm. And so she'll be down as well, and she has a duet with Lori.
Oh, fabulous.
And a solo of her own.
Oh, okay. Great. And so, Brendan, can you tell me a little bit about, well, you know, I've actually been to the skating club show before, and what is different about this year, do you think?
Well, we, you know, this is our 10th anniversary for the skating club.
Oh, wow.
And for Treadwell Arena, too, so it's actually a really great
celebration year,
too.
Yeah.
And that was one of the influences I had. The Oscars were on at the time when I was starting to think about this stuff, and I thought, we need to have some kind of event to really showcase and celebrate all of our skaters in our club. And I wanted to do something for them that they could tap into something personally in their routines. They could have some fun. But mm-hmm. we could turn this skating show or this recital into a really nice event for the community to come to. And so we've added and changed a couple things and it's going to be really, really great. One of the add-ons this year is that we are going to have a seafood chowder bar at both of the shows and a hot chocolate bar that will have all kinds of toppings and things like that. But the idea is that people can come, they can get bundled up, they can come and sit and watch a show, kind of like they're going to the movies and have a snack, have something warm, and really, really make it just a nice, warm, fun family event
one
for people
day
to go to.
Yeah. So it's appropriate for all ages. And speaking of, like, what is the age span of actually your skaters?
Well, our classes run anywhere from age 4 up through adults.
Oh, great.
And so I'm not actually sure our youngest basic skills skater in the club. Our youngest figure skater is about 7. And then we have up through an adult number and an adult synchronized skating team that is also performing in the club that must range near 60.
Yeah, I would say, like 4 to 60 at least, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Really great group of people.
And so how many skaters are there, do you think, total? Because you have 28 numbers, and I imagine.
Yeah, 28 numbers. Well, within our club, because it's all broke up into different levels throughout the skating club itself. So
mm-hmm.
we have, I believe, 10 or 12 of the basic skills. So those are the little guys, the little
mm-hmm.
tots that will be coming out. We've got 17, I believe, single solo numbers, and then we have all of the group numbers, and there's people in and out of those groups. So I'm thinking it's going to be about 40 to 45 skaters total that are
great.
Involved in the program.
Yeah, well, great. Yeah. So where can you get tickets to this fabulous event?
All the tickets are on sale through the Jack. So you can go to the Jack website or to the Jack office and buy tickets. And then if there are any remaining, we'll have them available at the door as well.
Great. And so you've got a show at 3, and the other one is at 7, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going, you guys are going to turn and burn.
Yeah.
So we're looking forward to hot chocolate bars, looking forward to seafood chowder bars. What is the other thing that you're just really excited about kind of in this show?
Well, I think we really want to take notice of all of the work that these kids have done since our season started, which is actually at the end of August. Mm-hmm. So this isn't just something we're kind of piecing together this last couple of weeks. This is something these kids have been working on for a really long time, and they're really passionate about it. And our club is just growing and getting stronger, and we want to teach the community to skate. That's why we're here, and we love it, and we just want to share that.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you so much for coming in. Again,
thank
the
you.
Shows are this Saturday, mm-hmm. 1 at 3 p.m., mm-hmm. 1 at 7 p.m. And is there a website we can get some more information?
Yeah, there's information on our club website, which is junoskatingclub.org.
Great.
And a link there to the tickets as well.
Perfect. Mm-hmm. Perfect.
And by all means, if you can't get to a computer, you don't have time to print it off, please just get down to the rink at either the 3 p.m. or the 7 p.m. show starts, and we'll have tickets there for you as well.
Fabulous. So that's the Juno Skating Club presenting their annual, a 10th annual showcase coming up here this Saturday. Thank you so much, Lori, Yvette, and, of course, Brendan, for coming in to talk with us about this fabulous event.
Great,
Shona. Thank you so much.
From Canyon Hydro, with custom hydro system designs, complete water-to-wire packages, and repair and replacement services for public and private hydro systems. More information can be found at canyonhydro.com.
And you're listening to Juno Afternoon. Had a fabulous day here, and we're going to continue that fabulous day here with we've got Dave Hunsaker and Bob Banghart in the studio today to talk about their upcoming not-so-silent film weekend. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Good to see you.
Yeah, so we've got, is this the second Not So Silent film in their series?
Third.
Oh, it's the third. Mm-hmm, yeah. Okay, so I saw The General. What was the first one?
I don't remember, but that was the second one.
That was the second one. Okay, so I missed the first one then. Well, The General was incredible, but the one that's coming up is happening this Saturday,
right,
correct?
Right.
And you want to, so the name of it is Haxan.
Yep.
So tell me a little bit about actually what that is.
It is a very strange film that's sort of the opposite of The General, and The General was a great thing that was fun for the whole family. It was comedic and brilliant.
Right, right.
This one's dark and not for the whole family. It was banned in America from its release in 1922 until I think the 60s.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of a midnight cult film. It's a pseudo-documentary, kind of a dramatization from Denmark about witches.
Okay.
And the devil and superstition and all that.
I have to say, I read a little review online about it, of course, and it said something about comparing women's hysteria to witches' hysteria. That maybe that there's.
We cut out that bit.
Oh.
There was a lot of explanatory text that didn't necessarily translate well to what we were trying to do musically. So
gotcha. We
took musicians' prerogative. And I think in David's opinion, this is the first film that's been edited by musicians.
You've heard of the director's cut.
This is the musician's cut.
So can you tell me, well, as we're going into this, so tell me a little bit about actually the process. Because it's a not-so-silent film, so it's actually a silent film that you're putting music to. So tell me about the process of, well, what are you playing and how do you do that? Really?
Well, you know, you take the piece and you sit and look at it, and there's technical ways to decipher. You know, you're going and looking at the meter of the film. You know, mm-hmm. how the action is moving forward.
Right.
What kind of tonalities the colors of the film might suggest in regard to just the light dark contrast of black and white.
Mm-hmm.
You said I watched it a number of times. David and I sat and watched the film and just talked about certain kinds of treatments to the scenes that might underscore what's going on in regard to action, might add a color value tonally to what the visuals are.
Right.
And then we start thinking about instrumentation, and then we're grabbing Patrick Murphy, and the three of us sat down,
okay.
And we had come up with some partitions in terms of switches in the scenes, and they wrote up notes, and then we sat down and just play what we feel might work. So we're constantly working the ideas out, and
mm-hmm.
we find something might work, we'll write it down, and then we'll go back and repeat that. And so it's refinement. We're going to be doing three shows, 4 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9:15.
9:15.
And
okay.
So, you know,
is it 9:15?
I believe it's 9:15. Why? It's a Colette thing. I don't know.
Okay. Right.
But, you know, so it'll be evolving. It's not like a fixed score that we've
That's
developed
right.
for this that we'll repeat the same show every time. It's sort of because we're responding to what we're seeing within the format of,
sure.
of some very broad architecture we've created.
So it's like it's like more tonal, like actually finding mm-hmm. the tone of the piece.
The score.
Right.
Yeah.
And then certain places where you definitely want to hit each time that you maybe it'll kind of be improv-ish for tone and then till
we
certain.
We started with, in many cases, with actually medieval music. The film is amazing for its production values
mm-hmm.
for the time, or actually for any time, as far as creating this look of something like the 13th century.
Okay.
So we've actually taken some music from that time, but we definitely jam it up and do a lot of improvisation based on it. So it's a sort of medieval jazz, if you will. I mean,
great.
It's definitely us watching the film and responding
yeah.
to it.
So what is the instrumentation, mostly?
David will be playing cittern. Patrick will be playing cello. I'll be playing five-string violin and mandolin. And some we'll be passing off some percussion back and forth.
Some percussion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. And how long does the film run? And you guys, you said you did some cutting, and how did that work out?
There was this, as Bob said, there was this kind of strange documentary textual stuff that just didn't go with any kind of music. It was really kind of a dry lecture, and we just cut it out. We lopped that off. That was the first maybe 15 minutes of the film. And then there was a very odd and sort of dated thing at the end, which is what you have alluded to about hysteria.
Uh-huh.
We cut that too. So we stuck with all the medieval stuff. So that left us with about an hour and 10 minutes.
Okay.
Which is this was a very ambitious film at the time. It remains the most expensive silent film that was ever made in Scandinavia.
Oh, really? So what made you want to do this particular film? What kind of drew you to it?
It's become kind of a cult film.
Okay.
I'm interested in medieval music, and I'm always interested in playing with Bob and with Patrick, and we played together before on an occasion, and this just seemed, I loved seeing the other not-so-silent film, you know, The General that they did, and this particular film is going to appeal to a sort of darker set, you know, it's a like I say, it's a cult film. It's a midnight film that's shown in a lot of places.
Okay.
Various jazz musicians have done scores to this over the years.
Oh, really?
To give you some kind of idea about what it is, there's a version we have of it, which is narrated. They took away the title cards, and it's narrated by William S. Burroughs.
Oh, okay. Right on.
And with commentary as
with
well.
His
oh,
own,
of course.
He throws
How could it not
his
be,
own,
really?
Yeah. And that's this kind of French jazz ensemble from the 60s, and it sounds very 60s. And I don't think they were actually looking at the movie. There's no evidence that
actually
ever
happened.
Seen it, except the drummer. The drummer seems to have been paying attention. But anyway, we are, and so it just seems like it's very offbeat and it's very unusual. It's very unlike the American silent films that were being produced at that time.
Okay.
And David's right on the production values. You're looking at it and you think it's a film made today in terms of the depth of the shoot, the elaborateness of the sets, some of the special effects, the liberal use of the human form, if you will. And, you know, I could see where it would have taken a 1922 audience in America to set them up on their ear.
Right.
They would have, you know, besides the topic being an interesting overview of this individual's particular opinion of religion.
Right. Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
He himself, the director, who's a guy called Benjamin Christensen, plays the devil.
Yeah.
With great enthusiasm.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, I think Gene Simmons watched this at some point in his life.
There's some tongue work here that has to be seen to be believed.
Nice. So, oh, that's scary, too. So
it
you're
is.
Saying that maybe it's not appropriate for all ages.
No.
So what would you say the recommended ages are? Because I see something about witches, and I'm like, let's go, everybody.
man,
well, it's the things that got it in trouble in America originally, there's some nudity in it, but by contemporary standards, it's something that could easily go on network TV. That's not a problem. It's more, you know, after kind of flirting around with the topic of witches and the devil and all that, he finally locks into a fairly serious story, which is about the way, really, the Inquisition was torturing or persecuting women who were healers for the most part.
Right.
And how they, in turn, through the torture process, end up ratting out other, mostly women. And so there are these scenes of torture that are pretty scary. And the stuff with the devil, these rituals that are depicted, are pretty scary. So I certainly would...
It's more content and ideas.
It's content and ideas rather than actual. I mean, there's not any gore, per se. And like I say, the nudity is mild. It's you know, I would...
Yeah, the normal video game is going to be way out of there compared to this. But it is a content and ideas thing. And to me, it was just watching through it. What struck me was like the gentleman was making a serious point out of the idea that, which is applicable today, right? You don't get straight information with torture.
Right.
And this was right there.
Right.
And all it did was breed more opportunities for people to be pulled out and singled out for a different belief system.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually it. The more I watch it, the more I get into the film. We sit and play it, and when you're doing that, you're pretty much digesting the film and responding accordingly.
As it goes, yeah.
I keep watching it. I keep seeing deeper and deeper into the film. It's rather a complex piece.
Yeah, it is.
Much more so than I would have assumed right off the top.
Sure.
A lot of times I think silent films have a kind of silliness quotient to them, and this one does somewhat, although we were able to obtain a version that had been restored to its original colorizing, which is something they used to do pretty often, and this one is beautiful. If it's an interior scene, for example, by a fireplace, it'll have an orange dye to it. They will have dyed it in orange.
Wow.
If it's outside in the moonlight, it's kind of a bluish tint, which is quite interesting. But back to your original question, I would just say that it would have freaked me out when I was a little kid to have seen it. So I would say not small children.
Not small children. Well, great. Thanks so much for coming in to talk about it, Dave and Bob. It's the Not So Silent film series. It's at the Goldtown Theater. It's this weekend. Can you tell us the times one more time?
Times are at 4, 7, and 9:15, and tickets are available at the theater. Rainy Day Books now?
Rainy Day Books.
Is it Rainy Day?
Okay. Yeah, and I think at the bookstores.
Hearthside.
Oh, and Hearthside.
I believe that's the case. Yeah,
I think that's where I got mine last time was
right.
Hearthside. Yeah.
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 So.
Okay, well, great. So you can check that out, and it's Haksan as the movie.
Haksan, yeah.
And it's maybe not for all, maybe not for young people, but definitely for everybody else in Juneau to go check this out. It's, you know, it's Dave Hunsaker, Bob Banghart, and Patrick Murphy.
Right.
Which is wonderful. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Black magic women, Nancy DeJourney's in the studio with me.
I think it was you, Sean.
just kidding. From the Juno Arts and Humanities Council with Arts Up.
Here
so,
we are.
What do we got?
Oh, we have a lot. You've talked about a whole bunch of it, which is good because we're way behind schedule already. Did you talk about the Lynn Schooler and Mark Kelly thing happening tonight?
No, I want to hear
Journeys
about that.
Along the Lost Coast with author Lynn Schooler and photographer Mark Kelly. This is out at UAS Egan Lecture Hall. There's a $5 donation. It's a fundraiser for the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. Should be gorgeous.
You know, yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah. Yeah. And a much nicer than today's weather.
It'll remind you of this past weekend.
And how it can be and why you do live here. Okay. There's Midnight Sun Night at Open Mic at the Alaskan. Edible Art of Place on Friday. The last
one
of
the
season.
The last one, yeah,
yep,
that's right.
That's 10 a.m. That's at the UAS Glacier View Room, and they always end with food. So
yeah,
you start at
and I've been to a couple of those. I love it. So, so informational and wonderful.
So, okay, and delicious. You've got Alice in Wonderland, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland this weekend. The theater at Latitude 58 is presenting it. It's at McFeeters Hall. You get the tickets at the door.
Oh, great. Fabulous.
So just show up and do that. Alaskapella Acapella is concluding the UAS Arts at Egan series out at on Friday night at 7 out at the Egan Lecture Hall. There is a fundraising dance for the King Island Christmas. Scott and Emily Lockie are teaching ballroom Latin and swing tunes. This is at the Rockwell Ballroom. $10 to get in. Just dance your way to Scotland, I guess.
Well, that's
well,
a great
time.
Yeah. I will do that.
Okay, 7 o'clock. That's Friday night. That's three things you need to do Friday night, not to mention the Young Company doing Nancy Drew Girl Detective.
That's right.
Do you have anything to add?
You know, it's a lot of kids doing some Nancy Drew, which I'm a big
Everyone
fan of.
Everyone loves Nancy Drew.
Right?
Yes. Okay, and Honky Tonk Habit at 10 p.m. at the Rendezvous. And you've already talked about the Slow Art Day. Great idea.
Yes, it's fabulous. We talked to them earlier this afternoon here on Juno Afternoon, and amazing. Take some time to look at some art.
Take some time.
That's right.
How to make a black cod lose its lunch.
Also happening at the Art Museum.
Sounds very artistic. World Tai Chi Day out at Mendenhall Glacier Visitors Center. That's at 10 o'clock in the morning. Go out there and do Tai Chi together. It's a free demonstrations and exercises in the main parking lot. 49 Writers has one of their sessions at the Jack at 10 o'clock in the morning. They had a great time last weekend. I happened to be there for that.
Wonderful.
It's National Prescription Drug Take Back Event at Nugget Mall. So if you get some old drugs hanging around that you outdated and whatnot, take them back. Yep. There's Carnival of Fun fundraiser. This is going on. There's starting at, from 2 to 5. This is a fundraiser for Lisa Morley. It's at the Jack. There's going to be carnival games, a bouncy house, a dunking pool.
There's a dunking booth. That makes me so – I know some people are going to be in that dunking booth.
Who's going to be? Somebody told me. They insulted me so that I would go, and I can't remember who it was.
Was it Costa? Colette Costa?
No.
Was it Mark Ridgway?
No, it was Mark Ridgway.
Okay, there you go.
So if you need to dunk some folks, here's your chance. And then it goes on into the night later from 8 p.m. on. It's more for 21 and above. So
that's right.
There'll be a beer and wine garden and all that sort of stuff.
There's a bunch of great bands.
It's going to be, Kari singing.
Our band's plan.
So, yeah, it's going to be a wonderful evening of fun. There is a magic show.
There's a magic show?
I love a magic show. Yes, our magicians are coming to town, and they are going to be over at the Douglas Library doing a family show and book signing. Richard Hatch has written a book about a Japanese magic trick, or I guess, or whatever you call it.
Okay.
And he'll be doing the magic trick, and his wife plays music that goes with it, a Japanese piece.
Oh, wow.
And then they'll have the little book there, and it's a delightful little book. So that's at 3 p.m. at the Douglas Library, and that's free.
Ooh.
And while you're over there at 3 o'clock, Soundtracks of the Silver Screen, you've already talked about this. This is our own figure skating event. It's going to be fabulous.
So cool.
I always like watching figure skating, so this is right here and now. Not So Silent Films, you just talked about that, 479. Ushkanade and the UAS Gay Straight Alliance has an open mic and poetry slam at the Silver Bow at 6.
Ooh, cool.
And at 7, the Jazz Divas are performing at Rockwell.
Wow, wow.
We've got Erica Lee, Julie Cozy, Kari Groovin, Sarah Johnson, and Taylor Vittick. That's at Rockwell. And you should call and get reservations, 463-4340. Young Company doing Nancy Drew. And then, as I mentioned, the carnivals. And then we move into Sunday. And there's track and field games and all-comer meets. That's not sport. I mean, art, I guess it is. Anyway, we like to it. On all levels.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, and so you can see Nancy Drew again. It's the Empty Bowls fundraiser for Glory.
Oh, great.
Everybody's favorite. I know some folks that have been making bowls like crazy, so go and have some soup and support the Glory Hole. That's at 5 p.m. on Sunday over at Centennial Hall. You can get the tickets at Hearthside and at Glory Hole and out the door. And Perseverance opens the road, weeps, and the well runs dry with a pay-as-you-can preview.
That's right, Sunday night.
7:30 p.m. On Monday, we're doing our arts roundtables at 12:15 from now on because so many people can't come in the evening.
Yeah.
So it's a noon thing. We will be talking about getting plans for 4th of July and also the first steps for our arts industry clustering. So if you're interested and just want to meet all the other arts people, come to the Jack at noon.
Great.
On Tuesday is when we actually have our magic show at the Jack. It is the Soirée Enchantée, an evening of theatrical magic and classical music.
Ooh.
Richard Hatch is a deceptionist. He's actually a physicist who does things with...
Does the art of deception.
Yes.
Right, okay.
And his wife and son are classical musicians, a violinist and a pianist. So it should be a delightful evening. Do come to that. That's at 7 p.m. at the Jack. Let's see, we've got time. You've got to get your pansies and violas ordered. There's on Wednesday, the second of the Pillars of America speaker series, Josh Sundquist. That's at Centennial Hall. You should get tickets to this if you need, because they sell out right away.
Okay.
JWAC presents The Betrayal of American Prosperity, Free Market Delusions, and America's Decline, and How We Must Compete in the Post-Dollar Era. They always win longest title.
Oh, God. Sounds like a busy week.
It is a busy week, and of course, get out on the boat at 6 p.m. on Wednesday. So, and, yeah, it's a, oh, Well, we'll talk about next Thursday.
That sounds fabulous. Thank you so much, Nancy, for coming in. We really appreciate it every week with Arts Up. And this is KTO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTO also broadcasts in the Valley and Auk Bay, tuned to K103.1, and Lemon and Switzer Creek at 101.7. We're also online at www.k2.org.
We cannot confirm the origin of these weapons, but we do believe that any use of chemical weapons in Syria would very likely have been originated with the Assad regime.
What's next for the U.S. if Syria did in fact use chemical weapons?
For Thursday, April 25th, it's All Things Considered.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Robert Seek.